Welcome to Cage Club, a Nicolas Cage podcast. I am one of your two hosts, Mike Manzi, along with...
I'm Joey Lewandowski, I'm the other host, and this is the second episode. This is us talking about Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And if you heard the first episode that we did, there is a little bit of a change. We were going to do, like, one episode per week, but we think that, you know, we're just going to do an episode a movie, and so some episodes might be, like, 10 minutes long, and some might be an hour long. It's all going to depend on how much he's in the movie. Like this one, for instance, yeah. It's weird that it's the second one that we're doing because, as far as I could tell, he's in four shots. Does that sound right?
He's in about four shots. I got one line out of him, too.
Oh, what was the line? I don't know if I heard the line.
Yeah, I had to go back and put on the subtitles, but it's when Brad is pulling into the school parking lot on the first day of school.
Yep.
Nick jumps up and he says,
"The cruising vessel."
I gotta go back and rewatch that because, I mean, he's in the opening. He tapes the "I'm a homo" sign to somebody's back.
Oh, that was him.
That was him. And that's really amazing how far the world has come in 30 years that, like,
yeah.
Like that's not even a joke anymore.
Right.
But back then, like, that's so 80s.
And that supplanted the "kick me" sign. You know, they went right from "kick me" to that.
Like, these are the cool guys. Those are the nerds. Here we go. We're hitting the ground running.
Lines are drawn.
But what's crazy about that is that I was watching it and I looked away. And then I turned back and I said to my sister, "Hey, keep an eye out for Nick Cage." And she said, "He was just on TV." And I said, no. And I rewound it, and sure enough, there he was. So, like, literally, I mean, in the first episode, you said, "Blink and you'll miss him."
Right.
I didn't blink, but, like, I looked down for, I don't know, 4 seconds, and I looked up, and he was gone, which is crazy. And that's sort of what he is the whole movie.
Do you remember what shot that was?
That was the one, the taping the signs of the kid's back. So it's, like, you know, in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Okay, because I also believe that he's in a shot where he's putting mayonnaise on a burger bun, and I missed that. The first time.
So,
is that him?
At one point in the movie, so he's just credited as Brad's bud.
Yeah.
And I don't even think he's in the credits. I looked in the credits. I didn't see his name in the credits.
Right. Me neither.
IMDb doesn't say he's uncredited, but in the Blu-ray that I have, he's not listed in the credits. So I don't understand why he's not, whatever. But he's just Brad's bud. He does not have a name. And he's still, again, Nicholas Coppola. For the second movie and the last time, he's Nicholas Coppola. But in the middle, before Brad gets fired from the burger place, he's in, like, two shots. You can see him in the background, and you sort of see him, like, as a quick close-up, but he doesn't have lines. He's just, you know, doing burger restaurant things.
He works at All-American Burger, right? He works there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, with 100% guaranteed breakfast.
Yeah. I think that's the one where he's mayonnaise on the burger bun. I think that's that shot I was referring to.
It's got to be, because the only other time that I saw him in the entire movie is at the football game. He's cheering in the crowd once.
Okay, I got a sighting. First day of school registration, when Arnold comes up to ask Brad to help him get a new job, Brad is standing there talking to his two pals, one of which is Nick Cage.
Okay.
And Nick is dressed like a mirror image of Brad. And there's sort of a reason for that, too. If you look, like, through the rest of the movie, like, Nick Cage is always wearing, like, a hat and, like, sort of more than one shirt or, like, a collared shirt. Like, he is dressed a lot like Brad, almost as if they're, like, some kind of twins or something.
Well, maybe they're gay with each other. And that's why, what if that's it?
Mm.
He's acting out, and he's taping the "I'm a homo" sign because he's uncomfortable with his own sexuality.
Trying to...
And he's in love with Brad.
He's projecting.
Oh, man. I think we cracked it.
Well, have you watched any of the special features?
No.
Okay. Now, I'm going to drop a bomb on you, if that's okay.
Okay.
Because I watched the special features. Nick Cage was supposed to play Brad.
Oh, man.
But he was too young. He was 17, and they needed someone who could work late nights. So that's the only reason he's not Brad. But that is why he looks like a clone of him throughout the whole movie. You know?
So he, like, went through the wardrobe process, I guess, and was just like, "You're going to be Brad, but then you can't be Brad. So you're just going to look like Brad and not have any lines."
It was like an 11th hour thing where Judd Reinhold was dating the director's best friend and living upstairs, and he did the audition, and you know, they're like, "Are you old enough?" And, like, "You're the man." And they let Nick Cage stay on as Brad's best friend.
Because, like, what's weird is that in the best of times, he's sort of the star of the TV series, and that's his first on-screen role.
Yeah.
And then in this, it makes sense that he would have been the star in terms of just, like, where he's going, but he's without knowing that he's relegated to the background. And then all of a sudden, in the next movie he's in, he's top billed.
He's front and center. It's his movie.
Like, it's like he came out of nowhere to be, you know, the second lead in a TV show, almost being the lead in a movie, or, you know, not like the necessarily the lead, because I guess, like, Sean Penn is billed first.
That's a tough one, too, you know? There is no real main character. Every kid is sort of a main character. Like, this movie, I feel, is doing what the Best of Times thought it was doing, right? We're getting that authentic slice of teenage life, like, fly-on-the-wall perspective. And it's working. And last week it didn't work so well. They didn't really know what kids were quite about. It's amazing how you can take sort of the same idea and get such drastically different results from it.
And I'm glad that we didn't have like a Crispin Glover-like character who we followed around the whole movie.
Yeah.
Because it would have seemed sort of forced. Like, you know, because not like everybody is sort of tied together because they all go to the same high school and they all sort of work or hang out at the mall. But, like, they don't all have to interconnect with one another. They're all sort of doing their own thing. And like you said, it's like a slice of life, fly on the wall. This is what high school is in 1981, 82, as opposed to Best of Times, where it's just like, we all do everything together, because that's what friends do.
Yeah,
whether we're washing cars, or we are going jean shopping together,
everything
on ladders, or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
So last episode, we talked about the Cage advice,
okay,
which is with Nick Cage's talking on the beach, telling his friend how to pick up chicks. And I felt like in this movie, we get the same thing from the character of Mike, who basically is saying the same sort of thing, talking about how to walk, how to talk, sort of how to take a woman out on a date. And I guess, like, was that in every, like, high school movie in the 80s? I guess, like...
The
cool guy teaching the nerd how to pick up girls?
That was, like, a huge social standard, right? Is, like, how to talk to women, right? How to pick up chicks. Like, hundreds of books were written about that. Like, The Pickup Artist. Like, that was even a movie in the 80s. Like, big, big theme, you know, permeating the 80s cinema. You don't see that so much these days, but it's one of those, like, rite of passage things. You know, everyone had the friend that knew more about sex than you, and, like, you know, he would clue you in, and then, you know, you build up your nerve the whole movie to do what you're supposed to.
And then you have the one friend tells you the right advice, and then you just go get the girl. That's just what happens.
Yeah, the first advice is always the right advice. Don't you know that? I mean, isn't that just like...
What's crazy about this movie, and I don't want to sort of veer too far off, because this is Cage Club, but, like, it's really sort of the starting point or a very early point for a lot of people. You have, you know, Jennifer Jason Leigh, who's still working. You have Nick Cage, who's the reason why we're all here. But you also have Forrest Whitaker,
yeah,
as a guy who seems like he's, like, a foot and a half taller than everybody else on screen. Like, today, I mean, Forrest Whitaker is, you know, one of the best actors probably in Hollywood. Seeing him on screen, I thought he was sort of average height. But back in this movie, he's like a gigantic, like, ripped athlete,
right,
who is the star of the football team.
Yeah, and he looks like a real life linebacker in the movie almost. It's, you know, but he was just a big kid, I suppose. You know, I mean, it's just maybe he had a growth spurt and hasn't grown since. Isn't that sort of how it works? But
I guess,
agree. It is jarring. Like, when he comes out of his car and he's towering over Mike, and you're like, is he on an apple crate? Are they intentionally shooting him from below? Perhaps, but it does stand out. And I love his performance. It's a very small performance, you know what I mean? Like, he says like two words and the rest is just like looks, you know?
All I remember him talking about is trying to get Earth, Wind, and Fire tickets.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's basically all he says, and then everything else is like at the football game is just his eyes.
Yeah, and then Spicoli trashes his car, which he loves, and then they blame it on the other team, and then he just dominates the football game, and they win 42-0. And that's pretty much the character arc for Forrest Whitaker's character.
But I love it that, unlike The Best of Times, like, there are tons of character arcs in this, you know? Like, even though we cut away from people, like, even, like you said, Forrest Whitaker, he's a minor character, but, like, he has, like, this, like, his car has an arc, you know? It's a joke that they set up from the beginning, you know? And then they pay it off really well, and it shows growth in that particular character. Like, that's very interesting. That's why this movie is a good movie.
I really wonder if The Best of Times was like a TV movie instead of a pilot, and it was an hour and a half long, if there would have been any kind of payoff. I don't think that there was, because as we talked about last time, the writing is just so bad.
Yeah, it just seemed like this disconnected, never-ending, you know, craziness, right? Like, even at the end, he's like, come back for more craziness next time. And it's like, there's nothing to ever, they're never going to accomplish it. But yeah, could you imagine if they made a show out of this movie? Like, it is the perfect template for, like, a sitcom, you know, Fast Times the show.
Exactly.
You could even do it today. Like, it would probably be more interesting if you did something like that today in a modern American high school. I've been out of high school for so long, I'd probably watch it.
Yeah. Because all the characters, like, even, like, they're just like Best of Times, you could almost argue that there's almost too many characters. But the difference here is that, like, you know who everybody is, what their relationships with each other are, why they're doing what they're doing. It really just comes down to, like, this is a good movie, and Best of Times is not good. It's just, that's the main difference.
Yeah, and, you know, like, Cameron Crowe, right? Like, you know this guy is, like, a really great writer. So, like, that helped a lot, too. That, you know, the methodology that he went through to create this story, like being an undercover high school kid and writing a novel first, like, that's investigative journalism, you know? That's, like, probably what helped make this such an interesting movie. Is like, it almost feels partially like we're watching reenactments of a documentary or real life.
Yeah, 100%.
I was playing this game, kind of, knowing that Nick Cage was cast as Brad. I was just watching them, imagining Nick Cage was playing Brad. So I was just picturing him, you know, like, masturbating in the bathroom and getting caught. And, like, what if it was, you know, what if he was the guy at the end that thwarts the robbery? You know what I mean? Like, it was just, like, it would have been so amazing to have that alternate version cut of this film.
Yeah, it's sort of sad that he wasn't the star. But, I mean, again, just sort of like the Best of Times, like, if that got picked up, who knows where he would have been. If he was actually the star of this, who knows what would have happened. I mean, the career that he has is because he wasn't the star of this, maybe. I don't know.
It would have been locked in a bank vault in Gremlins next year, like Judd Reinhold was.
But then exactly.
He'd been running next to Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop. Imagine that, like Judd Reinhold.
Oof.
He would have immediately had Judd Reinhold's career, but...
He could have. I mean, what would Judd Reinhold have done? Like, he would have, you know, if he wasn't, you know, coincidentally dating someone related to the director, it just, you know what I mean? It's just, it's the butterfly effect, it's the Cagefly effect. I think that's pretty much all I have. I mean, we could talk about the movie more, but that's sort of everything Cage-related in the movie.
Yeah, likewise. I think that's most of the stuff I wanted to bring up, especially just that couldn't believe that when I heard Nick Cage was supposed to play Brad, it was just like, everything sort of made sense. I was like, well, that's why he's in the movie.
Right.
I think they kind of did the same thing with, like, Eric Stoltz. Like, he tried out for Spicoli, didn't make it, but they made him Spicoli's friend. Like, that's just really cool producing, you know? Like, that's just really cool of them to, like, populate this movie with the people who didn't get the lead roles and stuff.
Yeah, I like that a lot. It's like, it's sort of classy in a way. It's also sort of kind of weird, to be honest, though. Like,
yeah,
hey,
unusual.
Like, you were almost the star of this movie that's going to become, you know, a classic, like a cult classic or whatever, for decades to come. But instead, you can't do it, so we'll just, like, put you on the side, and nobody's really going to remember that you're in the movie. Everybody's going to remember Sean Penn. Everybody's going to remember, you know, Phoebe Cates. But you're there too, so I mean, like, enjoy their success.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't. I think personally, I might have just taken it as a form of gratitude, you know, but I could definitely see someone not quite knowing how to handle that. Like, wait a minute, I didn't get the part, but you still want me to play, like, this part? Like, it does seem kind of confusing.
Very, very strange. So I think that'll just about do it. This is a shorter episode.
Yeah.
I think really the shortest episode we're going to have is going to be Never on Tuesday. So that's a sneak peek for that, because he's uncredited as Man in Red Sports Car.
He's in that even less than he's in this.
I'm very excited. I have no idea what Never on Tuesday is about. There's a bunch of people who play that character name of Zombie. So I guess it's a zombie movie? I don't know.
that would be a shock. Nothing about that seems like it would be any kind of zombie movie, but I have my fingers crossed. Believe me, if Nick Cage plays a zombie driving a car with sunglasses on, that would be like my dream.
I may have read it wrong, but I'm not going to check again. I want to make sure. That's what I want to think until we watch Never on Tuesday, which is coming up soon-ish.
80s rule is go on the hearsay, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So that'll just about do it for the second episode of the Cage Club podcast. That's Mike Manzi. I'm Joey Lewandowski. Join us next time for Valley Girl.
Bye.